Mick Jones had all the time he needed to compose the songs for that debut Foreigner album, but after a busy tour, they would have mere months to do it the second time around. That deadline imparted some undue creative pressure to Foreigner as they wrote and recorded Double Vision in the spring of 1978. Here's Mick Jones.
The real pressure was an internal thing, I think, that we had a standard that we'd set ourselves to live up to, you know, and especially after the first album, it was, obviously we knew people were looking at us. Can they sustain this? Can they do this? Or is this just like a freak album kind of thing, you know? So it's a combination of pride and pressure, I suppose. We've had a great understanding we've been fortunate to have a great understanding with the record company, that Atlantic Records, and it's like a bit of a family feeling there. And we never sort of felt direct pressure from anybody, from management or from the record company. It was more sort of an inner pressure that we felt we had to live up to what we had started, you know, what we'd achieved, you know. And that has carried on, you know, since that time.
I think we're going to dig deep for this one. We're going back to, I guess it's 78, off the Double Vision album.
That's Lou Gramm and Mick Jones of Foreigner performing Double Vision for me right here in the studio, sounding much the same way as they first composed it in demo form in 1978.
Well, you know, really, it's in a way, this is how we kind of wrote the songs in the first place. Maybe sometimes, you know, with an electric guitar, but it was just pretty stripped down like before. Well, it had kind of weird drum machines when we wrote that record.
Yeah, we wouldn't talk about that. Right down to, you know, just tossing ideas back and forth, not even knowing where these songs are going to go, you know. That's kind of the fun of it. Just, a little spark, a little flame, and just fanning it. See what happens, you know.
That was Foreigner lead singer and Double Vision co-writer Lou Gramm. The song's other writer, guitarist Mick Jones, says that the lyrical inspiration for Double Vision is pretty obvious.
Well, the title speaks for itself, you know. What do you expect? You gonna remember that? I think that was one of the first, that was sort of the one that we had sort of together that we thought was like, it was sort of a hybrid in a way of a different, you know, it was a different step. When I think back, I mean, the second album was quite different than the first album. We were starting to experiment a bit, you know, whether it would appear that way to people, it strikes me that I can see a definite a change there, you know. For a start, we didn't have that much time to think about it. We had to just go in and do it, you know. The first album was put together over a period of a year and the formation of a band, you know, and the second album was, we got to do it quick, you know, because we were supposed to be in Japan in 4 weeks' time or something, you know. Double Vision, I quite honestly didn't see as a single at that point. It was a surprise to me that it did become it was actually a gold single. You know, you always think you have sort of an idea of the potential of the songs, and that was a sort of a sleeper for me. I was quite surprised at the success of that song and what it actually represented as the title of the album, too.
The six members of Foreigner were still trying to make sense of the different emotions they were all experiencing as a result of the enormous success of their debut album. But still, Mick Jones, Lou Gramm, Ian McDonald, Ed Gagliardi, Al Greenwood, and Dennis Elliott managed to construct a game plan for their second album, Double Vision. Mick Jones explains.
I think the sense of making a complete album was foremost in my mind at the time. I wanted to be proud of an album that you could listen to from the beginning to the end and say, you know, that wasn't like three songs deep and then the rest was sort of filler. We were very committed to that thing of making a complete work of each album, you know, so that, the listener or we could, you know, feel that, hey, this is an album that you can put on and you don't have to take it off after three songs. You know, I started to understand, I got closer with Lou. I started to understand and we started to work together. We formed, our relationship was forming during that time. And I was finding out things about, you know, it was like being married in a way, finding out about the person that you're spending half your life with, you know. And these things were all developing, and I was learning how Lou would respond to different things, how a relationship was going to work, and he was learning the same thing about me, I guess. And as far as a plan, there was no real plan. It was just getting to know each other and just keeping that thing about, you know, a certain standard, which I felt that we had a sort of a vision of, that we knew what we had to achieve, you know.
That vision to which Mick Jones referred can perhaps also be seen in a song on Double Vision called Spellbinder. rich in musical sophistication, Spellbinder precluded the sound that Foreigner would develop on later albums, such as Foreigner 4 and Agent Provocateur. Here's Mick Jones.
I think mood-wise, you know, that was the... It actually, to me, it followed in the mode of a song on the first album called The Damage Is Done. It was sort of that mode that was, I felt, you know, a part of what was becoming our style in a way, or a part of our style, you know, which was sort of verging on the sophisticated, but not, you know, it just had, it was that going to that point, you know, where I didn't want to go perhaps too much past that. But I felt that that, you know, was, you know, it did show off a little bit more than like a three chord power guitar type song. It was an interesting song with a lot of mood in it. And, you know, we used a bit of backward guitar stuff and just, we used some strings on it. And it just had a real sort of special mood. I mean, that is one of the, if I look back, that's one of the songs that I really listen to. And I get a kick out of listening to that song now.
Spellbinder comes from the second Foreigner album, Double Vision, from summer 1978. When Mick Jones returns, he'll have original Foreigner lead singer Lou Gramm in tow to recall those hot-blooded days of selling 7 million copies of Double Vision in the U.S. alone. Follow In the Studio on our Facebook page and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Foreigner's Mick Jones for Double Vision. I'm Redbeard, and if there were two songs which defined the summer of 78, they had to be Miss You by the Rolling Stones and Hot Blooded by Foreigner. With an assist from Foreigner drummer Dennis Elliott, Lou Gramm wrote Hot Blooded with Foreigner founder, guitarist Mick Jones.
Dennis and I started just playing, and the riff just came out. And from there, it was, I guess it took about 10 minutes. That was it. You know, you spend days and weeks and months trying to write songs like that. And it's just no control. Those songs come out, they just come, you know. There's no way you can invent songs like that. I guess some, you know, people tell me they do, but I just don't know. You know, those kind of songs are, you know, that's a perfect example of just, you just have to be ready to catch those when they're flying through the air, you know. To me, that's the essence of real songwriting, you know. It's not sitting down, pouring over, you know, reams of paper and this. I mean, that's a part of it, but the real essence of songwriting is the ability to, you know, to just have your eyes open when it's going past you, you know, so you can pick it out.
Here's Foreigner's Lou Gramm and Mick Jones.
Some of them are pretty natural. I mean, you almost know right away. Some things you got to turn them inside out. I mean, I know a lot of these things. I still have cassettes of the early demos laying around on some of the really big ones, and they don't sound anything like, you wouldn't even recognize them, I'm telling you.
I mean, the song develops from the initial idea. Then you start throwing it around with everybody, and it's everybody else's input as well that comes in, and you know, some songs really are, you know, immediate, and you don't really have to mess with them.
You don't want to mess with them.
No. But you know, for the most part, you know, I think you have to put a bit of work into them and see how they fly, you know.
It is interesting to note that Foreigner at the time was a six-piece band, and that Hot Blooded utilized the more traditional guitar, bass, drums, singer quartet lineup that had worked so well for bands like The Who and Led Zeppelin. Here's Foreigner's Mick Jones.
The big thing there, in a way, was it was sort of slightly new territory. Lou and I hadn't quite, you know, that was a sort of, to me, that symbolized us really starting to understand each other. And we talked about the lyric melody, and we what we wanted to achieve there was sort of a street song, you know, like, you know, our Stones song or something, you know, something that was sparse and just direct and just really just spoke for itself completely. It was just, you know, and a different way of expressing and singing, you know. It was I don't think there was anything particularly like that quite on the first album, and to me that was a sort of a breakthrough to street talking a bit, you know. And I mean, that song, over the years, it's strange. We got a lot of criticism at one point, just about, that was the sort of the start of it, you know, one of the trends that we had to weather, you know, that punk at that time, I guess. Actually, just a couple of years ago, I finally heard a story about Johnny Rotten having received that a special sort of advanced copy of that particular song and having kept his girlfriend up all night long raving about it and, you know, air guitaring to it. What I'm trying to get at is that that song has lasted through the years, and it was sort of, and I've heard so many surprising situations that people have referred to that song in, you know. It's one of those kind of, I guess it was, you know, it was a milestone song for us.
And Mick Jones still remembers the first time he heard Hot Blooded on the radio.
You know, that is probably the greatest time when you first hear it on the radio. It's just, it's all from, and it's a funny point because then you know it's out of your hands. It's on its own. It's, you know, you have your relationship with the song and with the, you know, with an album, and at that point when you finally hear it on the radio, that's it. You know, you can't do anything to it anymore. It's it's its own thing from that point on, and you sort of almost say goodbye to that stage, and that's the departure stage, and from then on you play it on stage, you know, and it goes to all sorts of other things, but that is the moment of truth. Oh!
From the Double Vision album, that's Foreigner with Love Has Taken Its Toll, written by Foreigner singer Lou Gramm and sax player at the time, Ian McDonald. Love Has Taken Its Toll was the first Foreigner song that wasn't at least co-written by Mick Jones. Here's Mick's reaction.
I had taken the reins as far as writing was concerned on the first album, but I, you know, the whole thing behind the band was, and the way that we put, you know, the band sort of came together was in the spirit of discovering what we could do and who could do what, etc., you know, and, you know, it was interesting that the way that song came about because, you know, Ian was a very capable writer and Lou was sort of, had written before. And in a way, I guess it started out as, oh, we'll show Mick we can write a song kind of thing. And there was a little bit of uptightness, I guess, at the beginning of that because it was sort of, it was so much that way that I wasn't included in it that I sort of thought, well, I get the message. They want to do this song together, so it's great, you know. And then once we got over that, it was great. And I really got into the song and I probably worked harder on that song than you know, guitar-wise and some of the textures and stuff. I took a great deal of pains making, you know, giving everything I had to that song because it was the first, you know.
The song Back Where You Belong was another track on Double Vision in which Mick Jones gave everything he had, literally. Not only did he write the song, he also handled the lead vocals on Back Where You Belong, just as Mick had done on Star Rider on the first Foreigner album. It was interesting that Mick would do the lead vocals rather than Lou Gramm, but as Jones explained, having two capable singers offered at least a couple of advantages for Foreigner.
You know, what I kind of liked was the combination of perhaps, you know, my gentler voice and then, you know, the contrast with that and Lou. It in certain cases that worked very well. I was always quite reluctant to sing, actually, to tell you the truth. I mean, I never pushed myself. And there was never sort of a situation, oh, I want to sing this kind of thing. You know, Lou was a singer. It was sort of, you know, we felt that, you know, it would show another little side of what we did too, and different textures, different approach. You know, part of experimenting, really, you know, to see, we were still developing our style, you know, and that was part of the experiment. I must say that all through the years, you know, Lou was very, you know, would always encourage me to sing because when we wrote together I'd write, you know, I was kind of always a little uptight about singing, you know, and when we'd write, you know, we'd get sort of relaxed and everything and I'd start to sing a bit and very often I didn't realize it, but he was sort of listening to my phrasing and, you know, obviously when he sang to me, it sounded like wonderful, but it's like me hearing my voice, you know. So in a funny way, you know, Lou was always very supportive of me singing. And I think as well, you know, to give him a break, basically.
A rare Mick Jones turn at lead vocal came on the song Back Where You Belong from Foreigner's second album, Double Vision. Still to come, Foreigner doubles up on record-setting crowd size at California Jam 2 and doubles down on British legacy with Blue Morning, Blue Day. I'm Redbeard in the studio with Foreigner's Mick Jones. Double Vision, Foreigner's 7 million seller from summer 1978. I'm Redbeard. There were many reasons why the Double Vision album was so successful, including the top 20 hit, Blue Morning, Blue Day. Written by Mick Jones, Blue Morning, Blue Day was influenced by another band that shared Jones' British musical heritage.
That was a little Procol Harum coming out of me, in a way. I don't know whether, that's something that was in my mind. I don't know whether you remember the Procol Harum period when they were with the big orchestra, Conquistador and all that. So it was that mood that, for me, that was, that I felt very strongly that was a great, that was sort of probably an inspiration in that song. It was, and I was starting to experiment. I was getting clever on the piano. And, that's when I started to sort of, because I really had only started writing on the piano at the beginning of the band, on the first album. And it's been a learning process, basically, since then, But it showed, to me, it was a little touch of class that I wanted to, I felt that was a good balance for us to have, and just a sort of a little statement of, check this out, this is sort of different.
The founder of Foreigner, Mick Jones, never said as much, but deep down inside, I think all he really wanted was respect. Mick Jones didn't get it when Foreigner's 1976 debut on Atlantic Records sold more than Led Zeppelin's debut had for the same label. Mick Jones still didn't get the credit when Foreigner's second album, Double Vision, was released within weeks of the Rolling Stones classic, Some Girls album, and Foreigner outsold the Stones, too. Mick Jones really didn't feel that his songs were getting any respect until the epic I Want to Know What Love Is went to number one in 1985, and that song has now been recorded by over 100 others. Nevertheless, Mick Jones still has a restless heart, and a longtime dream of his has been to marry his Foreigner melodies with the power and grandeur of a symphony orchestra. Here's Mick Jones with me in the studio.
I mean, I've always had a dream about things, I mean, it's like, I am a romantic, I'm really not a realist at all. And the whole thing of this was sort of based on a dream. That's really the only way I can get through life, if we get sort of down to it. I mean, I have difficulty with just trying to take, life as it is. I have to dream in life. I have to have things to dream about.
Going back to the original, which appeared on Double Vision, I asked Mick Jones if it was indeed a moody period he was experiencing at the time that he wrote Blue Morning, Blue Day.
It was indeed. That album was, we were, I guess, buzzing about everything that was happening to us, and I think we were in a sort of a mode where we had 3 or 4 months to do the album, and right in between having done the tracks and then going to California to finish up, we had an appearance at the California Jam too, where we went on stage and played some of the song. We played Hot Blooded to 300,000 people that never heard it before. And it was sort of, from that point on, trying to get this album finished, it was a night and day affair. We were in that sort of mode where it was, off tour, take a couple of weeks off, back in the studio, start writing and back in the studio. And we'd sort of, the schedule was mapped out and we were running a little bit over, and we were offered to do this California Jam, which was the California Jam 2, Cal Jam 2. And it was something that although we weren't ready, basically, the album wasn't finished, we felt like it was going to be a big charge to get up in front of 300,000 people and see what it's like, to just see that many people in front of you. And in fact, you just couldn't see that many people. And people just went on and you just couldn't see the end of the crowd, So it was quite an event, I think Aerosmith were on the show. Ted Nugent flew in from Safari in Africa and landed at the last minute in a helicopter. It was, one of those. And we went up basically, and I think we did 3 or 4 songs, of which I think we did Double Vision and Hot Blood, and laid that on 300,000 people for the first time, and it worked. it's kind of different than just going and trying a song out in a club, This was sort of the other extreme, and it gave a certain edge to the rest of the album after we come off that stage and then went back to finish the album. We were never the kind of band that was going to be in tabloids, basically. We weren't sort of a, like a a glamour band or anything like that. I always felt that I wanted the band to have mystique, you know. And, you know, my idea really, I mean, we did sort of go that way kind of purposely, sort of. I felt that if we were going to last a long time, I thought we're not kind of going to be, you know, if we've splattered all over the papers and stuff like that, we didn't go out of our way, let's say, to sort of overdo anything like that. And to the point where actually we became the opposite of that and became what we were called at one point, like one of the faceless bands, you know, which I sort of resented in a way, but it was because we didn't go out for that. I was a firm believer that the music was speaking for us, you know. The interesting thing at that point was that we were on the same label as the Rolling Stones, and the release of that album coincided with, I believe it was Some Girls. And, you know, I'd always imagined that the Rolling Stones and Zeppelin sold millions of albums, but I found out that up to that point they had never sold a million albums. And so we found ourselves in a funny position where after 3 or 4 million albums apiece, both of us were in new territory, and we were like neck and neck, you know, up until about 6 million. And I think, I mean, I don't know what's sold since, you know, catalog-wise, but at the time, I think we pipped them at around 6.5 million. And I was quite proud of that little moment, I can tell you. But that added a sort of a special kind of a edge to the, you know, the career of that album.